world. It's
gone. Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, this has just turned into this hilarious.
This is the Frat House Sports Show. And now, for this week's completely different and humorous perspective on everything sports, here's Frat House Mike and Sidekick.
It is such an important show. It's such an important show, we had to have two intros. What can I say? Go home, Blog Talk, you're drunk! good evening, all. Welcome into another... Are we on the Frat House Sports Show? Oh, yes, we are, because we're at Blog Talk Radio, and what a mess this 400th show has turned out to be. Well, listen, at least we're going to sit here and laugh. June 20th, somehow or another, I think we got it all together, at least momentarily. We're about 20 minutes shy or thereabouts. Many, many thanks to our good friends at Blog Talk Radio. I don't even know where to start. Except to say that, this is our 400th production. And Blog Talk Radio always finds a way to make the memorable nights even that much more memorable. Honest to God, for any of you that have been following all these many, almost 8 years, you've been with us on many, many anniversary shows. Now we've got milestone shows that, in fact, turned into complete disasters, thanks to our good friends right here. Anyhow, we're going to be, for at least an abbreviated couple of hours here, we're going to try to get into chit-chatting about a little bit of sports. Combine that in with the fact that, hey, this is kind of a milestone. Think about that one. I'm going to be perfectly blunt. Over the past years, podcasting and this sort of thing has become increasingly more popular. In fact, I do know more people today, personally, I do know more people today who do this type of thing via the internet than I did 5 years ago. And consider that 5 years ago, we were already 3 years old. So I know that there are more people doing this sort of thing. And when I happen to encounter folks and say to them, yeah, we've been doing it for almost 8 years, and we're about ready to hit our 400th show. They sit there and go, what? Many, many people start this type of thing, and they start it with all good intentions. And after about 5, 10, 15, maybe 20, maybe 50 shows, it kind of, I don't know, gets old, perhaps maybe for them, loses its novelty value, anyhow, falls off the wayside, and then they don't do it anymore. Suddenly the show just kind of disappears. We've managed to make it to 400, and that's not to say that every show has been the greatest product in the world. There have been many that have not been. That's not to say that there haven't been times it doesn't get old, that it doesn't get perhaps to be a bit laborious. There have been times, perhaps maybe even, that I have sat down and said, you know what, I really don't feel like doing it tonight. Nonetheless, however, we have collectively kept it together as a group. And what makes it so entertaining are the folks that come together with all of us, myself, each week and bring different perspectives to a topic that changes constantly. that's the only thing that I can really think that actually keeps this program going as long as it possibly does. Is one, it is sports, and so therefore, by virtue of it being sports, the landscape is dramatically changing all the time, keeping the content fresh. But really, more importantly than anything else, are all of the people that come together on a weekly basis and bring their thoughts, their concepts, their opinions together as one group. And we do it as best we possibly can and hope that the folks that listen and listen in and have been listening in consistently for perhaps as many years as we've been doing it get some sort of entertainment, enjoyment, perhaps maybe even a little bit of knowledge out of it. We will be talking some sports and a couple of things that are on our list. Let me just run through them that we're going to try to get through here this evening. Of course, I had been anticipating that we would have had a full 2 hours. We'll see how it goes this evening. We did have a couple of big things happen this past weekend. Of course, now look, let's consider it is June 20th. So we are now starting to kind of get into that. Well, we're in that in-between season. Not quite the dog days of summer because summer hasn't even officially begun. But we're now starting to get into the hot doldrums. We're going to sit around. We're going to wait now, I guess, for football season to begin. And we'll be taking a look at training camps and that sort of thing. Nonetheless, however, we did have a U.S. Open Classic that took place this past weekend. I do say Classic, the 119th U.S. Open Golf Tournament that took place. And when I say Classic, I mean it from the standpoint of where it took place. Iconic, what I call iconic Pebble Beach. And to me, taking in the U.S. Open this past weekend was worth every minute of it, if for no other reason than to get to see Pebble Beach displayed and given its own showcase. I'm actually kind of glad that Pebble Beach is not on the regular tour circuit every single year, because by doing it, it is a U.S. Open that only comes around every once in a while. In fact, it makes playing at Pebble Beach so special. You can't help but enjoy the U.S. Open regardless of who wins and regardless of how the tournament turns out when, in my opinion, it's played at Pebble Beach. It was absolutely glorious and a lot of fun to watch. And I got to tell you, I took in quite a bit of it. We will touch on this past weekend at Pebble Beach. Meanwhile, the Women's World Cup continues to go. And, well, we've only had two games so far, two matches played by the women. But if I'm not mistaken, there was a match this afternoon. I haven't had a chance to catch up on exactly what the score was. And, in fact, the women were to have been playing their toughest competitor in the first round. So we will find out exactly what happened there, and we will touch on the Women's World Cup. Interesting results going on across the entire World Cup tournament if you take a look at the overall standings. We'll touch on those. In addition, the NBA Finals finished up last week. We will get our own trouble man in here to get some thoughts on that one because it was interesting last week when we had him on here. We were talking, you know, and I kind of heard a little bit of, well, I wouldn't say hedging, but of course, hey, he was sitting there going with the Golden State Warriors. And as it turned out to be the Toronto Raptors in six. I will get his thoughts on it. As we're on to the NBA, let's not forget that the NBA has their draft going on this very evening. So we'll also get some thoughts on that one and perhaps maybe even be able to bring you some live results. And the NHL, of course, is now in its off season, but I got to get some thoughts because we haven't had a chance to really delve into it. Got to get some thoughts from our guys, AP and Matt, on the state of the Flyers. Things not looking terribly great, in my opinion, in that particular area. And I'll be curious to get their thoughts as well on that. Meanwhile, over in another Philadelphia team that is ongoing right now, I am going to be interested in getting AP's thoughts on the recent happenings with, I guess, the team that everybody had kind of thought walking into the season was going to just be the automatic for the NL East, the Philadelphia Phillies. I've got my own thoughts on that one, and I got to be honest. I'm not liking the way I'm thinking. Anyhow, there you go. That's our lineup for this week. Hey, listen, if anybody, look, it's our 400 show. If you want to jump in with us, 347-826-9964. We would love to hear from you. I would particularly love to hear from you if, in fact, you have been listening all these many years. That would be awesome. Would love to showcase you as well, because to me, you're just as valuable as all the other people that participate in the program every single week. 347-826-9964. Jump in with us on any of our topics or anything that you want to bring up. All right. We're going to try to run a normal show from this point forward. Let's get everybody introduced, because it appears to me we do have the entire panel put together. No reason for them to be late, since we were late. Good evening, Sidekick. How are we doing?
What's going on, Mike? Happy 400, buddy.
Yes! Hard to think. It all started. It was just you and I. Somehow or another, we were able to put together some very, very entertaining 15 minutes.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I'm looking here. Well, sorry, I was out there for. I was trying to look here real quick. Trying to. I had it on here. Had that opening clip that, wow, sounded so rough looking back at it now.
Oh, God almighty. Yes. Yeah.
It's a wonder we made it to 400, right? But hey, you know, a couple shots of Jaeger or whatever, you know.
I'll tell you, it's great because
we did what we did.
Yeah, in my Facebook timeline, you know, you get the memories that pop up, and you know, I get them constantly of shows we did 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, and you get the pictures and what have you that come up. And of course, for those that don't know, we were a video production back at that time, which you can still see all the videos over on YouTube. And in all their glory.
And
you know, with due respect, my friend, some of them were really quite good. They really were. Some of them are very, very good.
You can definitely see, if you go back and you watch, just kind of pick through the timeline of the videos from, you know, the first video where, you know, it was supposed to be 15 minutes at the frat house or 5 minutes at the frat house, and it was 15 minutes long, to which my cousin used to always poke fun at us. Because my cousin Jeff used to always, hey, I thought this show was supposed to be like 5 minutes. It's like 20 minutes long.
Right.
And then it was like half an hour long as we kept growing, you know, growing it and everything. But you can see the progression from that very first one where, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, I was scared out of my pants. And when I said when I was joking about shots, I was doing shots before we went on the air because, getting in front of people is not my bailiwick at all. So I had to get some liquid courage in me for probably about the first 4 weeks. And then I started growing into it a little bit. Like you said, we've done a video, we started out all those years as a video production, and then we transitioned over to Blog Talk Radio, where now we're, users can call in, and, so we've gone from trying to be a 5 minute show to a 2 hour production now. In just about 8 years. I don't know. Pretty impressive, I think.
We did a 100th show. We did a 200th show. We did you get the 400. 400 is a monster. To me, that's just like a monster number. So it really is kind of almost mind-boggling. You know, when it comes right down to it, you and I were the face of it, but really, it was a three-person production because this guy was behind the scenes for all those video productions. Now, a voice on the show. Good evening, Brandon.
My voice would get on occasionally on the video show. You know, and towards the end there, we were miking up because I would just, try to add a little bit here and there. So, yeah, it started that way.
the ultimate producer, you know, now has a regular gig on the show, you know, kind of like those hybrid shows you hear on the radio, right?
Never was intended to be that way, though.
No, exactly. And, you know, with a lot of shows that are out there on the radio, that's exactly the way it kind of evolves. Suddenly the producer becomes this kind of major character where they were always kind of before behind the scenes. Now suddenly, you know, they're almost as big as you know, the highlighted characters of, you know, I'm thinking of like even like what's your show that you listened to in Philadelphia off of MMR?
Preston and Steve.
Right, exactly.
You had Casey. Casey started out as an intern.
Casey and Nick are both producers.
Yep. So, yeah.
And Marissa, she pretty much runs the show now, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up because that was a great analogy. It's great that you bring that up.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly the first thing I thought of. I mean, they've done similar things over at 97.5 The Fanatic, where suddenly the producers are suddenly taking on a larger role as far as commentary and what have you. But the first one that came to my mind was Preston and Steve. You kind of took the same road, Braden. But by gosh,
did you get a pay raise for that?
Yeah, he did. He did. He didn't want to tell you. But Sidekick, you're bringing up the progressions that are evident in the video, and it wasn't just progressions of, you know, you and I getting more comfortable with doing the program and being more comfortable with each other, you know, on the set and doing the show and what have you. It wasn't just that. There was also those tremendous progressions in the way that we did, you know, physically produced the show. The technology used, the lighting used, the applications, the software applications that were used, the cameras that were used, all of that all came from Brandon. So, you know, that's where that all came from in the early days. You know, you and I were just getting used to each other on camera and doing the whole production. Then there was the other part of it, which was the actual presentation of it, which, you know, that was, you know, I'd come up with an idea. I'd throw it by Brandon and say, hey, can we do X, you know, this, that, the other thing? And he'd sit there and figure out a way to get it done. So
ended up having a mixer and could control mic volumes, all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
When it was all said and done. We had no mic in the first couple shows. Then we had a couple mics on the table. Then you guys had the lavalier mics on the collar.
Yep.
Yeah, and then I had a mixer that I could actually fix the levels and make everybody sound the same. So, yeah, it kind of evolved. And then, you know, we were using GoPro cameras at the time. And as they improved, we improved. So.
Oh, just to the floodlights, you know, just putting the lighting.
Yeah, the lighting. Yeah, everything, you know. So, yep. Yeah. I mean, when it was all said and done, we had teleprompters going on iPads and all kinds of crap at the end.
Exactly. And then we all threw it away just for headsets and blog talk radio. Oh,
the phone-in thing. Well, we just to be fair, how that evolved, we used to try to interview guests a lot, and it was always hard, you know, because you could Skype call with a guest, and we had a TV in the background, a monitor that you could see, and you could hear, and I had everything good. The problem was the timing. If they weren't available between 7 and 9 on a Thursday night, you know, it was tough. So, you know, sometimes we'd pre-record stuff, you know, and, you know, this way with the phone lines, you know, when we do want to have other people on, it's a lot easier.
Yep. All right. Well, I'll tell you, somebody that's been with us, and I'm trying to think, I you know, he might actually be able to tell us exactly. We've been on the air for, it'll be 8 years this September. Matt has to have been with us now for at least 4, maybe 5 of those. So maybe he knows exactly. Either way, I'm sure he's going to say, hey, it doesn't matter because, look, it's...
I say, all right, all right, all right. All right, all right, all right. At least it's been 4 years because my first book came out in 2015, and we did it after the first book release. Yeah, was it 15 or was it early 16 when you reached out to me? I forget.
I had you on as a guest first.
Yeah.
And then I brought you back in as a regular, and we had you on regularly, but we had you in a segmented spot where we would have you come in and we would just have you talk hockey. Well, then that got expanded to being you're part of the whole production. So that was a slow evolutionary process as well. But I mean, really, when it comes right down to it, to be here as many—I mean, even 4 years—that is a long time. I would imagine you have said many, many times yourself, Matt, that you—if for some reason or another we can't do a show or we take a week off, which doesn't happen very often at all, or you can't be on the show because perhaps maybe you've got something else going on, that you actually feel bad about it.
Yep, I do. I mean, I love you guys, man. I'm glad you gave me an opportunity to make a contribution to the world of sports, man, somehow, somewhere, some way. And I'm eternally grateful, man. It's a beautiful feeling, man, you know, knowing that sometimes, you know, someone's out there listening, and sometimes we all get feedback back, you know, we get calls from people, you know, and it's a great feeling, you know, sort of like a dream I had as a kid, you know, hopefully, you know, when I was growing up listening to sports radio with my father, you know, wondering what it would be like to be on the other side, you know, of that microphone, you know, and contributing and all that. And it's a beautiful feeling, and God love you guys for giving me a chance, and I love y'all.
And we love having you, honest to God. I mean, frequently when we're sitting and we're looking at lineups and we're going, okay, well, who's going to be on the show this week? You know, oh, Matt's not going to be there. Oh, damn, you know. And somebody else, I will say this, somebody else, who, getting to that point, you know, he's getting to that point. He's our own troublemaker, you know. He's getting there, you know.
Ooh, come upon me. I had to fight. Took him a dinner with all my might. I come upon the heart. I had to win. Then start all over and win again.
You know I jack.
What up, though, 400?
Yeah, that's something, huh? 400.
400. 400. 400. Let's see. That's after 200 and... Yeah, it's after some numbers. 400, Mike. Congratulations.
That's a lot. Thank you very much.
That's a lot,
that
man. Let me get this out the way. I got to say my words because I honestly, in preparing this week, I really got emotional. I have been trying to do podcasts for a very, very long time. It started in the education sector where I created one of the first HBCU college career podcasts for the nation. And then started my own production for sports, ran into so many different roadblocks, and finally FT Sports Podcast emerged with my brothers here in Michigan. 4 years strong, and all of us needed to part ways due to careers and families. And Mike gave me an opportunity 2 years ago to join this outstanding team. If you want to talk about putting together a dream team, you talk about all parts of life is on this show, and I am proud to be part of this show because I was only supposed to be here for college football, and it grew to be more, and I thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of 400 and hopefully and praying for more and bring such a flair to this show. and have you yelling at me, laughing at me, and sometimes me and Brandon throwing blows at one another. But I love every bit of it. So thank you so much, and congratulations on 400 and many more to come.
I think all of us absolutely echo your remarks right back at you, my friend. You have brought a special dynamic to this program that wasn't there before. And maybe it is that at times almost adversarial way, but it is rich. It is rich and it is fun.
It's good to have more opinions, you know, on a topic sometimes.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Even if you don't agree, that's cool. You know, our nation's politics don't show that, but it's cool to disagree and still be friends at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. No, I enjoy it, man. And even the highlight of this was having an opportunity to host Brad House Sports. That was great. When Dad leaves the room, the kids come out and play. That was fun. So thank you again, fellas. And I just can't wait to continue on this journey.
It'll
and
probably happen
me,
again in the future.
Trust me, you will get that
opportunity
again. As long
as it's not doing baseball
again.
Season, I'm good.
There is no doubt in my mind that opportunity will come your way again. I promise you. Listen, I wouldn't mind taking a couple nights off. You know, I'm the old guy.
As long as it's not
guy.
During baseball season.
I'm the old guy on this panel. I mean, you know, and I don't mind admitting it. Hey, you know, the old guy can use the night off. Yes, thank you very much, though, Chris. And like I said, there may at times be, it might sound to the audience like there's tremendous tension and animosity. I don't think anybody ever leaves a conversation or ends a program. While it might sound like that, I don't think any of us ever walk away going, you know something, I don't know if I can really ever get back on the air with that guy. That it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And I just want everybody to know that. Now, it does happen, however, with this guy. I will say that.
No.
You know, one of the things I want to bring up, AP, and I don't know if you noticed it, but in almost every single situation we've talked about, you start out with myself and Sidekick, and then Brandon evolves, and then we go to Matt, and then Matt evolves, and then as Chris just said, Chris evolved, AP, you evolved. Your role got larger and larger and larger, and this whole thing has been an evolution. And I jest as well. I joke. You know, you're not just a hockey guy. You're a part of the whole team. You're a part of the program.
You know what? I'm proud of that, Mike. You know, congratulations on the 400th. I remember the first time you ever had me on. You sent a message out. I think you put it on Facebook, and you were like, is there anybody out there who's actually won a fantasy football league? And I said, I've won a couple, but I'm not a guy that wins all the time. You're like, that's good enough. So I came on, and I think Kelt Lutek was the one guy that I was on with. And,
okay.
Yeah, like I did pretty well. I was so nervous that first show. And then so I was on for that show, and then I wrote an article about how the NHL playoff format needed to be scrapped, and you had me on again, and then you would just bring me on for like a hockey segment for like the last 15 minutes of the show, and then I remember there was one night where like a bunch of guys couldn't make it, so you asked me if I could be on for the whole 2 hours, and I was. And then you just started bringing me back every week, and yeah, I've loved every minute of it. Chris, I think you brought up, I think you termed it really well. It's an all-star cast. I mean, I think about this a lot when I'm at work, and yeah, I'm not just saying this because I work with you guys every week, but yeah, I'll sit there and think. I'm like, you know what? Like every guy on that show is so knowledgeable and they bring so much to the table. I mean, Matt with, you know, how much he knows about the history of all four sports, Yeah, Brandon with his nod to the NFL. Chris, the way you break down the NBA, like, it's amazing. Like, I think you could be on, any national radio show and do as good a job as anybody. You know, sidekick with his special brand of humor. Yeah, and Mike, you bring everything, you bring it all together, and it's, I try and get people to listen to the show, because I'll tell them it really is quality entertainment. It's not just a bunch of guys, it's really well done. It's professional, and I've actually had some people who listen to it, and they really enjoy it. So I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, and that's funny, because I heard you starting out there and you go, it's not just a bunch of guys. And yet what's interesting is that when I have described it to people who are on the outside, I will say to them, hey, you know what? If you listen to the program, really what it is it's a bunch of guys sitting at the bar talking sports. But
it is.
But you're going to get a different dynamic. You're not going to get the same dynamic. Because I said, if you have a bunch of your buddies sitting at the bar talking sports, what you're going to get from that group of guys is you're going to get a pretty homogenous viewpoint. They're all going to be friends, first of all. And you're all going to be from the same area. I said, when you're listening to this group of guys sitting at the bar talking sports, you got somebody from St. Louis, Florida, Michigan. We're PA and Delaware area and what? I mean, you're getting people from different areas. We got almost every age group represented here, just about every age group. And you've got different. You know, everybody's bringing a different strength from the standpoint of the sport that they're, I guess, greatest knowledge of. Mayan, of course, doesn't get any appreciation whatsoever on this show, but that's okay. that's what you get, and that's. Why I bring that up? You say, well, it's like a bunch of guys, and I was completing your sentence because I have described it as, hey, we're just a bunch of guys sitting around at the bar talking sports. But it's not like any other group of guys sitting at the bar talking sports. That's the difference.
Yeah.
So let's get at it, guys, because we got a late start and we need to belly up to the bar. Matt, you had some thoughts on the U.S. Open. I had some entree thoughts as I opened the show on the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open was this past weekend. And, God, it is, to me, it is so wonderful to get to watch a golf tournament at Pebble Beach. I just enjoy it so greatly. It might sound stupid. It might sound, well, Mike, that's like the least non-sports thing you may have ever said. There is something. I mean, it's one of the things I love about watching Augusta. But I was making the point the other day, when we were watching the U.S. Open, you see Augusta every single year. And that's fine. I love seeing Augusta every single year. But really what's kind of neat is when you get to see Pebble Beach only every so often because it's on the U.S. Open. And, of course, it moves around. So I'm trying to think the last time it was in there. You'll know exactly. I know they mentioned it. I think it was 9 years ago. Would that be right? Was that the last time that Pebble Beach was in the U.S. Open?
I'm not sure.
But you had some thoughts on it, so go ahead.
I think it's a classic case of Gary Woodland. He's been a pro since 2007. This was his first major win ever. I mean, he had in the Masters, his best thing was tied for 24th in 2011, tied for 6th in the PGA last year. The British Open, he was tied for 12th in 2016. But this was his first major win. And for 12 years, a long apprenticeship, just not, not really getting there. And finally he pulls it off. And also as a case of redemption, he worked on his short game. I mean, that's what the commentators were all talking about during that final round, that, he had turned his short game around You know, and finally he just put it all together and scored an enormous win, the greatest win of his life so far. And, you know, it's just – and there, he got the respect of everyone else on the course there because, you know, he had been in for so long and, you know, had never gotten, you know, a major win at all. I mean, this was his sixth professional win all time, but the first major one. And it's, you know, it's been a long time coming, always a bridesmaid but never the bride. And finally – he finally walked down that aisle and became the bride, you know, and walked off with the trophy. And it's a beautiful story. And you know, again, on Father's Day with his father watching on and all, looking on and all that, mother and father, you know, it was just, it was a great, it's a great moment.
35 years old too.
Yep.
As kind of, as you alluded to, Matt, and Gary Woodland, if I'm not mistaken, I think led from round two all the way through. So he was on the he was at the top of the leaderboard after round two, and then three and four. He never lost. He never lost that. Now, mind you, it did get a little bit close, as one would like to think it would. You know, as we got into the back nine of the fourth round, so it did get a little bit close. But it was a you know, interesting. You know. Golf is one of those games where you can have a guy like Gary Woodland just bam, and we see it all the time. It happens all the time. Here comes a guy out of nowhere and win a major, and that's what you saw this year. Let me ask you this, and I'll throw it open to anybody else, of course, on the panel, and, of course, anybody else on the panel that wants to make any comments about the U.S. Open as well. You know, we've been waiting now since the Masters to see whether, and, I, you know, we talked about it after the Masters, and I hate to take, you know, here's a tournament that was won by a virtual, I mean, you know, nobody really knew who Gary Woodland was. He wasn't a household name, and I don't mean to demean that and take anything away from it by bringing up Tiger Woods. But isn't that what Tiger Woods does? He always kind of takes the spotlight away from things. Following the Masters, one of the big conversations we had right here on the air was, well, let's see whether, in fact, this truly is a comeback for Tiger Woods. We've now seen, you know, not the greatest of performances so far following the Masters. Does anybody have any thoughts so far on what we're seeing from the reclamation project or the reaffirmation project of Tiger Woods following the Masters?
I mean, and the facts are the facts. You get this a lot, right? Would you take a player or the field? And sometimes you are prone to take the player, especially when they're dominant, like Tiger Woods has been in the past. But this is one of those times where you can comfortably say, oh, the field. I mean, people want to see Tiger win another one. So it's just the hype around that. But we still have to keep in mind, just like an old age Eli Manning, just like an old age Peyton Manning, as he transitioned to Denver, as we look at old basketball players, sometimes it just runs out. And we want that person to continue on their dominance. And when we associate golf, if Tiger's playing, we associate him and his past dominance versus what he has the ability to do now. So for me, it's just another, okay, he didn't win it, so not a big deal. Let's get it on a weekend where he is in final contention, and then let's have a deeper conversation about his play.
And believe it or not, Chris, my thought exactly. That's kind of my sentiment. I just didn't know whether anybody else had any other thought with regard to it. I will say this. Since the Masters, and it does not surprise me, it's one of the things that I brought up before, just this very year, that kind of annoys me about our sports media, is this predilection to have to know what every move that Tiger Woods is making. It bothers me. It annoys me. It's almost, well, Tiger Woods didn't make the cut. Okay, are you telling me every single person that didn't make the cut? How come you're not telling me every single person that's not making the cut? You know, that's what bothers me about the way we have always covered Tiger Woods. I'm okay with where Tiger Woods is. I'm right with you, Chris. If Tiger Woods has a good match, we're going to know it. We're going to know it after round two. Going into round three, if he's in contention, you're going to know it. The media doesn't have to tell me. So that's the only thing that I kind of bring up with it. Go ahead, Matt.
Thing about Tiger Woods is he got off to a very poor start, and then you know he had to play catch up, and he never really got on. And since you talked about ever since the Masters win, what has been going on? To my mind, it's been a reversion back to you know what it was throughout this whole decade of the 2010s. You know, and we talked about this before. According to my charts here, in all four Grand Slam tournaments, if Tiger Woods doesn't win the thing, it's either feast or famine. Very rarely does he place among the top five, and here in the U.S. Open, he reverted back to form. He was not among the top five at all, as it was last month with the PGA. And I think it's just he had that win in the Masters, but now it was a brilliant spark, a brilliant light in the dark, and now it's back to flickering and dying out slowly, as it were. And whether now the next month is the question is the British Open, can he revive in the British Open, or will it be just more of the same? And I think that's the story about Tiger Woods. To me, the untold story is the fact that Brooks Koepka finished second to Gary Woodland. And looking at my charts here, next year I'm going to start keeping a chart about, the great using that point system I created about how'd you place in the majors. I suspect that Brooks Koepka will probably rank as number one as the best golfer at Grand Slam competition for the 2010s because he's always in there. If he's not winning, he's always amongst the top five. And according to my rating system, he probably will be the best golfer of the 2010s based according to my calculations when I start doing the tabulations. That's my guess.
And you know what's interesting about that, Matt, is that he is not a household name. He is not the first name that people think of when you start thinking golf of the modern of the modern era, this particular era. Brooks Koepka is not the guy you think of. That is not the name that's on the tip of your tongue.
But I
find very, very interesting.
In the 2010s, so the calculations will probably be him, Justin Rose, and McIlroy. They'll probably be high up there in the top echelons, for this decade, for the 2010s. That
would
be
I would agree. I would agree. I like your thinking there. I will say this with absolute respect to Tiger Woods. Matt, your dad, you're spot on. That sluggish start that he had early on, there was even question after round one whether he would make the cut. He made the cut. Coming into round four, he was really, he was at the bottom of the list. I believe he came in as a plus two. He had a tremendous round four after getting through the early holes. And if I'm not mistaken, did he end even? I believe he ended even.
Something like that, yeah.
But that was actually even with a couple of superb holes that he played on the back nine in order to get to that point. So he really did have a very, very good fourth round, despite the fact, like I said, I believe he came into Sunday's play as a plus two, which would have been near the bottom. Okay. Anyhow, that was the U.S. Open. Matt, do you know where the British Open is being played this year?
Not off the tip of my tongue. No.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I was just wondering whether you knew off the top of your head. But that'll be the next one coming up. Keeping tabs on what's happening with the U.S. women over in FIFA World Cup. I was just checking. I know that they played this afternoon. I believe it was in a 3 p.m. Match.
They won.
I believe against Sweden, and they won 2-0. So that puts them at 3-0 now in the standings and sitting driving the car in their group. So, very interesting. I don't know if anybody has any comments on what we've seen so far or whether anybody's even following it. I am following it a bit, probably more so than I have in the past. This past week, I got to be honest, gentlemen, this past week at work has just been bonkers. So if I've been following anything, it's been more peripherally.
Mike, I actually do have something.
Yes.
Oh, on the women's cup.
Yes.
So far through three games through this group stage, the women have scored 18 goals. That's a new record for a team score in group in both the men and the women's ranks in the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of goals. Of course, it was helped by that first game that they played, where they where they were accused of running the score up.
But you know what's interesting though is they played against Taiwan in that opening game, 13-0. They played Chile and blanked Chile, and then they came into their third game and they blanked Sweden. So they haven't let up the goalie, which I believe is Hope Solo, has not let a goal in so far through three games.
And Sweden was considered to be their toughest competitor in the group that they're currently sitting in. So that being said, they have pretty much, 2-0. That's a normal score in soccer anyhow. The fact that there was no goals scored against. I mean, they're dominating. The U.S. women were a team that came into World Cup this year as the predominant favorite. What I find interesting, folks, and I sent everybody the standings, the group standings, if you wanted to take a look at them in FIFA World Cup. In looking them over last night, one of the things I found very, very interesting was that all of the top teams are all what you would suspect to be standard, what I would call standard European teams. England, France, Germany, U.S., okay, outside of Europe. You're not finding in there, I would have suspected we could have had, perhaps maybe a couple of teams outside of the European area. I we're not necessarily really seeing that, which I found rather interesting. It does seem to be the kind of traditional dominance that we're seeing right now. At least in the women's side. I don't know if anybody has any. Let me just pull the standings up here real quick and see what in Group A, France is leading 3-0. Go ahead.
It's unique that the U.S. team did not need this game. Like if they just wanted to chill out and rest, they could have done that. They could have played their backups. They didn't need to play their starters, from what I've heard. But, shout out to them going out and doing exactly what they were supposed to do. I echo what I said last week. Those who were complaining about them running up the score. It is the best that each country has to offer, regardless of where they are ranked, regardless of how difficult or not difficult opponents are. If you're in this tournament, you are in this tournament representing the country and the best you have to offer. And the U.S. team is showing that our best is dominant. And I love that. So it's about to get more difficult for them. If I'm not mistaken, they got France. I don't think it's France coming up next, but their next upcoming opponents is the knockout round. So, we've seen damn near things, fellas. In boxing, we've seen Tyson go down, and we didn't expect that. And, in all sports, we've seen the highly favored and dominant go down at certain points in history. So, they have broken history in the first round and in the opening sessions here. Let's see what happens, because if they lose a game, they're done. So it's still up in the air. Everyone has their chance, and let's see who takes their best shot against this U.S. team.
Yep. France is in Group A. They're leading Group A. Germany is in Group B, and they are leading Group B. Italy is I don't know how they're dealing with that one. You've got a three-way tie in Group C, Italy,
yeah.
Australia, and Brazil. But I guess maybe the point I was making earlier was I would have thought perhaps maybe a team like Brazil, a South American team, could have gotten to the top of, say, one of their group. You know, what I'm finding interesting is that we have the traditional European teams pretty much all at the top in Group D. You've got England at 3-0, but that followed then by Japan, who was 1-1-1. The Netherlands in Group E. Now in the Netherlands, we've got an interesting mix of countries that are represented in Group E: Netherlands, Canada, Cameroon, and New Zealand. So you've got the Netherlands at the top. And Group F, then, you've got the USA, Sweden, Chile, and Thailand. And, of course, the USA is up at the top of three wins and no losses. So, I don't know. I would have thought a team like Brazil potentially could have make a run at it. Spain, where was I looking? There was one team in here I was thinking perhaps I could have anyhow, I'm missing it as I'm scrolling through. But that was the only observation I had to make about it. I'm not sure exactly when the women will be playing next. I know that they're generally taking – of course, now we're into the knockout round, so they're going to start playing probably a little more frequently. They were on a schedule of about 5 days off and then a match was about what their rotation was. So we'll see how it rotates from here at this point. Any other thoughts on
their next opponent in Spain on Monday?
See there? We're going to turn it around pretty quick. So they played Thursday, and we're going to turn right around on Monday. Spain.
Wow.
All right. All right,
yeah.
There you go. NBA Finals.
Let me take it from here, man. Let me go ahead and take it from here. NBA Finals. Mike, I was wrong, but I'm not going to apologize because that was an excellent, excellent Game 7. That had me on the edge of my seat. But let me just go ahead and put it out there. Congratulations to the Toronto Raptors on winning their first NBA title, which is disgusting because I don't want to see Kyle Lowry on the pedestal as he's on right now. But whatever. I'm just going to say this, fellas. You saw when Kevin Durant played. You saw when Klay Thompson, in history, in Game 6, no matter which series you want to point out, in Game 6, Klay is Klay. We should be in Game 7. We should be talking about a Game 7 victory by the Golden State Warriors if Klay Thompson was still playing and healthy. When he went down, all you were hoping for was two things. One, Toronto put Golden State out their misery because it was no way that they were going to win that game. Or B, if Klay Thompson can Golden State just hold on and just do it for Klay at this point? Because it was so emotional after he went down with his knee injury that you were just hoping one of the two was just going to happen. And I'm telling you right now, that was one of the most exciting Game 6 games I've ever seen. NBA Finals or any series at that. That was excellent. But I was wrong. I'm more interested about the free agency now. The free agency stories are about to just explode because of those injuries. So I'm looking forward to the next few weeks.
My view of the finals is that there's a few occasions where injuries played a role in a team winning or not winning a championship. Like in 1951, the Rochester Royals, who are now the Sacramento Kings, won their only NBA title simply because their arch rivals, the Minneapolis Lakers, George Mikan was hurt and knocked out. I mean, if Mikan doesn't get hurt, then there's no way the Royals would have won that championship. In 1958, the St. Louis Hawks beat the Celtics, you know, because Bill Russell was gimpy. I think he missed out one or two games, and that allowed the Hawks to, you know, steal that series. And then after that, the Celtics won eight straight titles. In 73, the Celtics could have reached the NBA Finals, but John Havlicek got hurt, you know, in the semifinals taking on the Knicks. And even though the Celtics had home court advantage, and everyone has said if Havlicek had been healthy for Game 7, Boston probably would have taken it. And sometimes it happens like that. You get hurt at the wrong time. One of the reasons why the Lakers lost in 89 to the Pistons was that, you know, they went into the finals gimpy. They lost some guys. They were tapped out, and also Detroit was craving revenge, and they had blood in their eyes, and they made it happen, and all that. And that's my sense of it. If Golden State was healthy and had all their fellas, I don't think Toronto would have had a prayer, in my view. But
you know what, Matt? What pains me about the narrative,
yeah,
is that it was so Evan, it was so obvious. I mean, it wasn't that it was Toronto just took it to Golden State and Toronto deserved it. Now, granted, Golden State missed a lot of free throws in Game 6. You knock those down, you're going to Game 7. It's just that simple. Boogie missed a few of them at the stretch throughout the game. Draymond missed one, but Draymond also hit a clutch three to bring it to 5. It was a lot of things that took place, but the free throws was what killed Golden State, not the injury. I will say that. But it was so obvious that if Klay stayed in that game, we're talking about he put up 40, possibly even 48, 50 points at the end of game 6, because he was unstoppable. You want to talk about unstoppable. Kyle Lowry was unstoppable in the first quarter, but Klay was unstoppable all game until he went down with that knee injury. It was so blatant in game 5 that if Kevin Durant would have stayed healthy, even with a 70% Kevin Durant, because he didn't move around a lot. When he tried to move, that's when he blew his Achilles. Golden State would have taken this series. Let's just throw it out there, man. Like, Toronto got lucky. I want to see that again. I want to see a healthy Golden State team against the Toronto Raptors. Now, everyone was saying the same thing about Cleveland when Golden State first won theirs. If Kyrie wasn't injured and blah, 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 and then they came back full strength, took 7 games, but they beat them eventually. So if we're going to say that about the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James, then let me see a healthy Golden State Warrior team against that Toronto Raptor team, because Toronto still might be intact next season. Let me see at least Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green one more time with a healthy core lineup. Let me see that series again. Let's see if it plays out the same way. Because I got to tell you, Golden State should have won that series, but injuries gave Toronto that championship.
Here's another thing about that game 6. There, I think it was in the fourth quarter, Golden State was able to force turnovers, steal possession of the ball, yet they blew 2 shots. I think it was a 2 3-pointers. Either it was Draymond Green twice blew the shots, or he blew one and someone else blew the other. And I thought to myself, oh, bummer, man. That's going to kill them. It's going to kill them if they lose.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they did lose. Do you remember that, Chris? Was it midway in the fourth thing? They did those 2 turnovers. They got the fast break, but they couldn't convert it. And I thought, oh, bummer.
Yeah, yeah.
The
transition play. It was so much emotion going on.
Yeah.
Even the free throws at the end, towards the end of the game, late in the three minutes remaining in the game, DeMarcus Cousins missed 2 free throws, if I'm not mistaken. It was the fact that happened. When you start to add the numbers up, Golden State could have won. But if they did, after Klay's injury, I was hoping to just get them to game 7. But part of me was like, you know what, Toronto, just go ahead and put them down. Because it was a heavyweight fight at this point. You got the champions on the rope. The champion's been fighting. It's been struggling all the way to the 8th round. And you know the 8th round, the champ's going to come out and start hitting you in the mouth. And that's what Golden State started doing to Toronto in this series. Started hitting them in the mouth. We're going to take this game. We're going to go home. We're going to do all this stuff. Game 5. We're going to grind this out. We're going to win this game, and we're going to get this to game seven. It was a heavyweight fight. And then after the underdog knocks him down one more time and the champ gets up, you're like, you know what? Just throw in the towel, because it's – I don't think you're going to win this. Like, it once Clay went down, it was done. It was like, okay, guys, it's – what else can you do? I mean, come on, fellas. We all watch our sports. NASCAR is not a sport. It's entertainment, so let's make sure we throw that out there. But in every form of entertainment, in every form of entertainment, we see this, and we always walk away – wondering what if. This was a what if moment. And if you were a fan of basketball or just watched that game, you had to walk away and say, my God, if Golden State was healthy, what if? Congratulations to Toronto, but it's there by that, though. Come on.
And that's a backhanded thanks. That's a backhanded thing.
It is. I'm not going to lie. It is. But it, come on, Mike. Come on.
Come on, Chris. Let's give Toronto a little bit of credit here for taking advantage. Wait a minute, hold on. Taking advantage of every single opportunity they knew they had to take advantage of to get them the advantage they needed to be in the position that they were in Game Six. Now, come on,
stop it, Michael.
No, seriously, there were a lot of good things that Toronto did very, very well in this series. And I brought I brought up a number of them even last week.
Let me ask you a question, Mike.
There were times that team had to play defensively very, very well, and they did in those games.
And they did. Absolutely. Defense is what got
them
to the dance. I'm not taking that away from them. Trust me. If I broke down Toronto's game, I'm impressed by Toronto. I am. I'm happy for that team. Outside of Kyle Lowry, I have no beef with Toronto. I really don't. I have no beef with the Toronto Raptors. I'm happy for them. I really am. But I cannot help but to look at this and say, man, Golden State, the heart of a champion, to even get to the finals man down and to play the way that they did. And every game, fellas, if you watched every game, you looked at it and said there was not one game that Toronto just took it to Golden State. I mean, there was not one game. Even with the broken down hobble team that they had, they competed, and it took everything that Toronto had to put them down. A healthy Golden State team would not be no contest, no mas, over five, and that was it. That it should have been done in five. It wasn't. That's it.
And with due respect, they have a name for what you're saying. It's called loser's lament.
No, you know what, Mike? Let me ask you a question. Jabril Peppers, if he would have played in that game against Florida State, do you think Michigan would have won? I mean, really, honestly.
No.
If he played in that game, you still think Florida State would have beat Michigan?
Yes.
Okay. I beg to differ, but okay. All right. Okay. We must have watched two different games, but I'm okay. Okay. I give up. Right.
Listen, I'll defer to you because I consider you a bit much better expert than myself. But I'm just saying to you, I watched every single game of the NBA Finals. I am not the NBA basketball aficionado that you are. And so therefore, I defer. But I think to sit here and give Toronto a backhanded compliment, I don't know is necessarily completely fair to Toronto. That's just my personal opinion.
That's fine.
All.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Congratulations, Toronto. It's a fact, man.
And let me speak on behalf of all of the Toronto Raptors fans out there that listen to Frat House Sports. They appreciate your sincerity.
No, they don't.
Let's get over real quick to hey, we got a draft going on, Chris. In the NBA right now. I don't know whether you're tracking it as we're on the air or not, or whether you even have any interest in it. But here you go. I'm giving you a couple of minutes to give us some thoughts on what we have going on right now on this little event over at ESPN.
Yeah, well, you know what? shout out to the Toronto Raptors for winning the NBA Finals. I mean, it's, you know, congratulations. Zion, number one. New Orleans
yep.
made a splash. They traded the number four pick that they received from the L.A. Lakers.
Yep.
The Lakers going to go get Anthony Davis, foregone conclusion. I didn't want it to happen. I don't know why. I just don't like to see stuff like that. But when you got two of the top five players in the league on the same team, you got to give up something. You got to do everything. And to be quite honest with you, it's chalk right now in the lottery. I mean, in the draft. R.J. Barrett, I thought the Knicks was going to do, you know, New York things and go in the opposite direction like the Giants or the Jets or the Yankees sometimes or the Mets. Pretty much every New York team that drafts or does anything, they always go in the opposite direction. So I thought the Knicks was going to do the same exact thing, but they got it right. They got R.J. Barrett. They're going to build this team. I mean, it's going to be probably 2-3 years before we actually start talking about the Knickerbockers doing anything. Yep. But it's still to be seen because R.J. Barrett is a guard, two guard. You got, I forget his name, Smith at the point guard. You got a lot of good pieces for the New York Knicks, and it's just a question of whether or not Kevin Durant wants to go to New York. I mean, it's New York, the Nets, or Golden State. And I honestly believe after what we saw in the NBA Finals, I think Kevin Durant stays. That's just – I hope he stays. That's my personal opinion. But if you're watching the draft, it's chalk right now. It's nothing really too exciting. Obviously, there's a lot of trades that took place. Minnesota moved to six, trading Zarek for the number six pick from Minnesota. So they moved up. Atlanta moves up as well. Atlanta's
yep.
going to be a formidable team. They're young. They need to continue to stay healthy. We need to continue to see Trae Young stay healthy, play well, but most importantly, play defense. We know he can shoot. We know he can pass. They're going to be an exciting team to watch. It's just a lot of good teams that are now coming out of the ashes. And as much as everybody wants to give it to L.A., whether it's the Clippers if Kawhi goes, whether it's LeBron and AD, there's a lot of teams that are starting to come out of the ashes. Memphis looks like that they're going to be rebuilding with John Morant as their point guard. And then when you move a guy as you did to Utah, my guy, Utah is going to be a formidable team as well because all they needed was really a good point guard to go with Donovan Mitchell, and now they got that. So it's very interesting to see what's going to happen when the free agent market opens up. I got my eyes on Detroit. I want to know who they're going to get tonight, and I want to know what the hell they're going to do with Reggie Jackson. So if you're a Michigan fan, native, or you love the Pistons, Reggie Jackson is not in a Pistons uniform next season, damn it. And if he is, you might as well just go ahead and chalk it up because they're not making the playoffs. That's it.
We are about to enter the what I would call Boston Celtics region of the draft, as they will be drafting at 14, 20, and 22. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's where the Boston Celtics will be drafting.
Can I say this, Mike, real fast?
Yeah. Yep.
Can any of you guys in any sport, not including NASCAR because we know that's entertainment, if you can think of anything where you looked at a team and said, they're the favorite. Like, as soon as LeBron James left the Eastern Conference, one team was the favorite. It was the Boston Celtics. Everybody on this panel knew it. Everybody knew it. Maybe somebody said Toronto. I think Matt, if I can recall going backwards, I said Toronto was probably the fourth best team after LeBron left. I even threw Washington in there because I thought that they would be formidable. I was wrong about that. But Boston was unanimous. That was the team. Can you think of any team that has fallen so far down from being the favorite to possibly not even making the playoffs next season, rebuilding next season? They lost Al Horford because they couldn't come to an agreement. Kyrie Irving is gone. They might lose Marcus Smart. And they tried to move their draft picks to get Anthony Davis. That failed. They tried to move their draft picks again to get another key market player. That failed. Danny Ainge has been holding on to these number one draft picks for years. and did nothing with them. Can you think of any team in any sport, excluding what you know, that has done that, has failed that bad? Any team?
Nothing comes to mind.
Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns are close. They're starting to look better finally. Yeah, I mean they had so, and the Jets, they both wasted so many first round picks and not really had much to show for it.
But Brandon, I think the difference between them is that those teams didn't stockpile number one draft picks. They just sucked
Cleveland,
so bad.
Cleveland kind of did. Yeah, towards the end, why they're better now.
And the most recent one. Yeah,
got one.
Yeah.
I got one for you. And of course it's hockey, but the Edmonton Oilers, they won the lottery maybe like two or three times, and yeah, they've had top five picks in the draft for God knows how long, and they're still struggling just to get into the playoffs. I mean, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was a number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Taylor Hall was the number one overall pick. Yeah, they wound up trading him away for garbage. They got Jordan Eberle was a high draft pick, and they're still a team that's floundering around. They made the playoffs that one year and made a little bit of a run, but they made the playoffs maybe once in the last maybe 10 years. So that's the one team I can think of. They had a slew of number one picks and didn't do anything with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's so rare that it happens.
Yeah.
The Pistons,
Red
Wings, and the Lions.
Yeah. Chris, I want to throw a scenario at
you. Trying to come for my team? Are you trying to come for my team? Hold on.
I mean,
one Stanley Cup, and you just got a mouthful of a sudden.
Quietly.
You just need to sit there and enjoy your little Stanley Cup, because your city can't keep a team, and the team that they got finally won something, and you excited. Shut your ass up.
If you want, I can bust out all the World Series championship rings if you want.
Oh,
what does that matter?
Psychic, you're burying yourself. You're burying yourself. I was just about to defend you, and then you pull that one. I was just gonna say. Don't busting all over his chops. His four teams haven't won anything in a while, so. You know,
wait a minute, you coming for me
particularly,
too?
You win an
NFL championship and you coming for me?
St. Louis Blues haven't won anything.
Tonight.
And by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but Toronto Raptors have never won anything either.
George is coming for me in these championships.
But wait, hold on. Wait. I think the Raptors just made their pick in the draft. Oh, they picked up Drake.
You just need to take a nap coming from my team, and then you're going to talk about the Eagles like y'all just so grandiose, winning all these Super Bowls.
Hold on.
Y'all beat the great and all-powerful Patriots, and you running your mouth. Stop.
I didn't hear anybody bring up the Eagles. You're the one that brought up the Eagles.
No, you brought
no
up my team.
No one brought up the Eagles, all right? Okay.
You know what? Because my teams ain't won in a while. That's trash. Let Matt say what he needs to say.
Go ahead, Matt.
We're talking about Boston teetering on a precipice. Here's the scenario for you. Let's say that they do go over that precipice and they do decline and fall. Do you see Brad Stevens getting the axe as head coach? Because he's now had five consecutive playoff failures and all that. Do you think you see him getting the axe? And if he does get fired, where do you think Brad Stevens goes to coaching in the NBA? You think if the Sixers too fall short, you know, and don't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, they get rid of Brett Brown and put Brad Stevens in as head coach? Because I remember you broached that once.
No. I think Brad Stevens stays with the young nucleus because of what he was able to do with the young core that was Boston. That's not his fault that Danny Ainge brought in Kyrie, brought in Brendan Hayward, and let's just put it out there because no one's talking about it. That injury to Brendan Hayward really set that team backwards because they were really built a certain way. And because of that injury and because of Kyrie going down, you saw that team grow. If it wasn't for those injuries and the setback that Kyrie had, with his knee, you really would have saw Boston at his full potential. And honestly, we could be having a different narrative. So I don't know if that's Brad Stevens' fault, but as far as player development is concerned, that's what you want. And he's been able to do that. He really has been. What his knock is being able to push and change in the playoffs and adapt to those and have lineups to go against other lineups. His issue is being outcoached by the others. And let's just face it, in the NBA, you don't get a lot of good player development, and you don't get a lot of good head coaches that you can say, man, he can coach. Brad Stevens can coach. It's just he's been outranked and outcoached, and to be quite honest with you, been put in a situation where his roster has never been at 100% since he's been there. So it's I don't know if they would fire him. I think Danny Ainge is the one that everybody should come for because, again, he's the one that stockpiled all these number one picks and has done absolutely nothing with them. You have to chalk that up as disappointing. You really do. You had one of the best point guards in the league, upper emerging two guard in the league, and you did what again? You got, eliminated. Swept. Gentlemen swept. There's so many different things that happens, and I think the finger has to be pointed at Danny Ainge more so than Brad Stevens.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
For the sake of time here this evening, let me do this. Let me jump over to the NHL. I want to get some thoughts on, because I know it's becoming gentlemen, it's becoming concerning. I'm going to jump over to the NHL. The state of the Flyers, and what I want to try to do is maybe get this in about 10 minutes time here, because I am watching the clock since we unfortunately got gypped on the front end here a little bit. Because I do have a couple of questions I do want to get in with AP with regard to our other Philadelphia team. And I do want to get them in this show because I'm concerned we could see something happen over there before we get back on the air next week. But let me get into the state of the Flyers for a moment, because I frankly have got some concerns myself. And I'm going to be honest, here I go again. I'm going to defer to the guys that know it better than myself. And if I'm concerned, guys, it seems to me there is a need for concern. AP, go right at it.
Mike, it's my worst nightmare. It's my absolute worst nightmare, because Paul Holmgren is back running this team. I mean, it's so obvious by all the moves that he's making. I mean, I know that Chuck Fletcher is the GM, but I think he's just a puppet and Paul Holmgren's pulling the strings. I mean, after the playoffs were over and going into the off season, the Flyers had $34 million under the salary cap. Well, in the two trades that they made, they've already spent $17 million. Well, between the two trades and signing Kevin Hayes, they spent $17 million of it. And by the time, they sign all the restricted free agents, They're going to have about $1.5 million left. So they've spent all that cap money on a bunch of extremely mediocre players.
Yeah,
in their, one in his late 20s, and then two defensemen who are in their early 30s.
Right.
And you know what? You give up. I mean, they gave up a really high draft pick for Justin Braun. I mean, They gave up a second-round pick, which is going to be, you know, the 41st overall pick. I mean, you can get some really good players at that spot. And you know, for a guy who's 32, who was a minus 14 last year, you know, on a good team. I mean, like, sometimes you can plus and minus can be deceiving. But when you're on a good team like the Sharks, there's no way you should be a minus 42 like that. Paul Holmgren, Dave Scott, and Chuck Fletcher, they're running the Flyers right into the ground. And the thing is, with them spending all of their salary cap money, there's a chance they're going to have to move one of their good young players like a Nolan Patrick or a Travis Konechny or a Travis Sanheim. I mean, they're already talking about maybe trading Shane Gostisbehere. So it's an absolute disaster. It's an absolute disaster.
Consider for a moment, AP,
they're going to give up on the kid.
I was going to say, we haven't even entered free agency yet, which doesn't start until July 1st. I mean,
yeah, and they don't, they can't even get into it because they, because they've spent all their cat money.
Exactly. Go ahead, Matt.
No, go finish up, because my worry here is,
yeah, that's all I was going to say. Go ahead.
I mean, you've got Niskanen, but he's an offensive defenseman. I mean, you've got a surfeit of offensive defensemen. Well, where's the penalty killers? Where's the defensive specialists? Because that's the fatal weakness of the Flyers, no defensive special teams. Where are you going to get these guys who are going to grind it out and help Carter Hart, you know, play defense and all that? Because Carter Hart needs that help. He can't do it all by himself. And
yeah.
And Justin Braun, a minus 14 on the plus minus. I mean, it just, I mean, they're going with veterans, but they're the wrong type of veterans, in my view.
Yeah.
In a sense, they're sacrificing the kids. And it's just, I got bad. I mean, I got bad feelings about this. I mean, you kind of wonder how long Alan Vigneault will last. You know, I don't think the Flyers will make the playoffs next year. I really don't.
I don't either, Matt. I don't either. And, you know, like you were talking about, yeah, what they're going to do with the kids. Now that they want and they got all these veteran defensemen, there's no spot for a guy like Phil Myers. You know, Mark Friedman, who, yeah, not a lot of people know about, but, yeah, he's been with the Phantoms the last couple of years. He was a third-round pick in 2014. I'm really, really high on this kid. But now that you went and made all these moves for these veterans that made a lot of money, he's going to be buried on the Phantoms again. Like, this is the year that guys like Myers and Friedman need to be coming up and, you know, getting their feet wet in the NHL. But they're not going to be able to do it because you have these overpriced veterans who, you know, they're not going to sit guys who make, I mean, Niskanen makes $5.7 million. Braun makes close to $4 million. They're not going to sit guys like that, you know, and then have a Myers or a Friedman play. So they're, I mean, it's Paul Holmgren's back running this team. I mean, these are the exact kind of moves that he made when he was the GM and that put them in the salary cap hell that Hextall dug them out of. And they're going right back into it again. And the thing is, it's going to take them years and years. Go ahead.
These don't even look like smart moves.
No,
they're
not.
No, no.
It's one thing if you've got somebody who on paper, you know, has got the numbers.
Like
a massive
machine.
Exactly. Great point.
Yeah.
We don't have that with what we have seen that's been presented up to this point. And the fact that free agency hasn't even begun is scary unto itself. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't know who it
is. Here's another thing. Yeah. I mean, on paper, Braun and, you know, and Niskanen, yeah, they got playoff experience. But the thing is, you know, Braun is on the downside here. And also, Santa Jose, they get two draft picks. And they're an aging team. Doug Wilson, that's a brilliant coup for Doug Wilson because now he gets two draft picks, and that helps them rebuild. And it's going to be interesting to see how Washington, if that helps their defense. So now they got Gudas there. He's a young kid there. That might help them out, you know, and improve next season. And here's another thing. Carter Hart's confidence. Because if he's not going to get defensive help and he's playing an entire season, I wonder if he's facing things all alone. I wonder, and they're scoring on him. I wonder if that's going to destroy his confidence psychologically. And that might cut short a potentially brilliant career as well, psychologically.
Matt, I was going to bring that very thing up. I was going to bring that. Playing behind this dreck of a defense, he's probably going to be facing like 35, 40 shots a night. And I don't care how good you are. And Carter Hart, he is that good. But, no goaltender, who has a defense like that in front of him is going to be able to – win you games all by himself. I mean, he showed that last year. As good as he was last year, the Flyers still fell well short of the playoffs. And you know what? The thing with the Gudas move, what Washington made, they made a brilliant move because they traded for Nick Jensen last year, who is younger. He's a younger version of Niskanen. So they're going to slide him into Niskanen's number four spot. And then you get Gudas, who makes – $3 million less than Niskanen does. You put him on that third pairing. I mean, and the Flyers are going to pick up 30% of Gudas' salary. So, I mean, Niskanen doesn't expire until 2021. So the Flyers pretty much just allowed Washington to be able to sign their unrestricted free agents that are coming out, like Braden Holtby and Jake Verana and Nicholas Backstrom, because now they're going to have all that extra money to be able to sign those guys for a guy who might help the Flyers for the next 1 or 2 years. And I don't know if any of you guys read that article I read, but you know, I posted the one thing from the Hockey News about all Niskanen's all his stats. I mean, he's clearly a player that had a sharp decline last year. So,
yep.
Unless he bounces back, it's a terrible move for the Flyers. They're even like the most ardent Flyers fans that I've talked to. They're extremely concerned because, I mean, it's so obvious that they're just not making, Mike, like you said, not making very smart moves.
Right. And with due respect, let me say this.
Yeah.
Back in, we saw this, you know, and here I am again. I view myself as a fan on the outside looking in. We saw this tremendous all-star coaching staff put together in mid-May.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we're shook to our core, and we say, "Oh my gosh, this looks great! Look at this coaching crew that they put together." And you think to yourself, "My gosh, with a crew like that, they're certainly going to have some sort of success." You can't help but have success when you got a group like that behind the bench, right? And now,
yeah,
all of a sudden, this is what we're being assembled for these guys. You know, I think somebody brought it up now. How long is Vigneault going to hang around when this kind of nonsense is being pulled? You know, how long you be able to keep this together? What looked like a really good situation looks like it might be blue smoke and mirrors.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's smoke and mirrors. Here's another thing that now that you brought up Vigneault, that they signed Kevin Hayes. When Hayes played for Vigneault, he had some of the worst years of his career. And then the year that Vigneault was fired as the Rangers coach, the year after that, Kevin Hayes had the best year of his career. So now those two are going to be reunited. So, yeah, I don't see the logic in that either. So they're you know, it's back to just running the franchise by the seat of your pants. Just, yeah, throwing darts at a dartboard, seeing what might stick instead of having some type of methodical plan in place that you're going to stick to. This team have no direction whatsoever. They're just trying to throw it all together and hope that it all works out. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work. We've already seen it before with Holmgren the last time he was a GM.
Here's one last thing about Carter Hart. If he does get a shellacking this coming season, are the Flyers going to abandon him like they did Bobrovsky? I mean, you know, they exiled him out to Columbus. But the thing is, Bobrovsky got the last laugh. He's had, you know, he had a couple of good seasons, you know, with Columbus and all that. And it'd be interesting. I mean, if they give up on Carter Hart, where would he go and all that in the trading stakes? Because if I was a team and I'm watching this, I might be, you know, dangling in front of the Flyers.
Oh,
hey,
yeah,
we'll take them off your heads. We'll give you this guy. We just want Carter Hart, and then they, what a steal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm on a text thread with, like, my brother, my cousin, and my dad, and I keep saying that it's partly just to get a rise out of them, but I think there's some truth, though. I keep saying that don't be surprised if the Flyers trade Carter Hart at some point. And they're all like, no, there's no way they'll ever do that. And I'm like, I'm telling you, with Paul Holmgren running this team and with Dave Scott being all about you got to win now and I want to spend up to the cap, don't be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if, Matt, like you were saying, they did the same thing with Bobrovsky. And, you know, it would be a huge mistake if they did. It would be
a
huge
mistake. What's a team that could use Carter Hart? Edmonton, you think, or
Carolina? I think he would. If he goes to Carolina, I think they're a Stanley Cup contender. That's the one thing. Even as well as Mrazek played in the playoffs, if Carter Hart went to Carolina, I think they're a force to be reckoned with. I think like a legitimate number one's the one thing that they're missing.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that would be the thing. Yeah. Keep your season. I think that's the team. I think it's going to be so wide open in the NHL next season. I think I don't see St. Louis repeating, but I think it's going to be so wide open, and there's going to see some surprises. I think Carolina will be a team to keep your eyes on because it reminds me of like the Flyers in 73. They made it to the semifinals, beat Montreal in that game one, then got sliced up four straight, and then the following year they won the cup. In a sense, they had to grow up. They were still like little kids, but the next year they grew up. And I wonder if it's going to be the same with Carolina. They came so close, but they became pumpkins. But now, the next season, they get it all together. They grow up, and then they take it all the way to the house.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people. I'll be real quick, Mike. There's a lot of people that say that Carolina was a fluke, but I don't think so. And two teams to look out for next year that I think are up-and-comers are the Montreal Canadiens and the Colorado Avalanche. I think they're like the teams that are going to be on the rise.
Yeah, yeah.
One final observation for my part. I cannot believe what I just heard, and that was, who do you think Carter Hart could go to? This guy was supposed to be the goalie of the future. He's only 20 years old, and we're sitting here saying, who do we think Carter Hart could go to? Anyhow, let me jump over real quick to the other Philadelphia team that I think has some big concerns at this moment, AP.
Yeah.
And that's the Philadelphia Phillies. And I know that baseball is not a topic that people love to spend a lot of time on here, but I gotta bring this up because I'm now starting to get some serious concerns about my team.
Mm-hmm.
They are losing again this evening to a team that they should be sweeping, but they're getting swept by. We haven't won a game but one in the past, I think, 7 games. If we lose again this evening, we will have been swept twice just within this month, and we are only halfway through it. This Philadelphia Phillies team was expected to, in fact, just kind of romp over the NL East and take care of it this year. That's not to say that they would be the NL representative, but they would certainly make it to the playoffs. Right now, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I think what this team needs is a serious management change. I do not like seeing what is going on with this team. Your boy Segura is under the microscope big time.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on all this nonsense this week?
Yeah, I mean, him not running out that ball last night, I mean, even Kapler came out and said it was unacceptable, and he said that he talked to him about it. That's just something you don't do.
Unacceptable, but he's in the lineup.
Yeah, I agree. He should have been benched for at least one game. I definitely agree with that.
We got Bryce Harper leading off tonight in the number one spot. Are you kidding me?
I was just going to bring that up because – I heard a stat last night going into that doubleheader last night. Ever since Andrew McCutchen got hurt, they've only scored 2 first inning runs. I'm not saying McCutchen getting hurt is the whole reason for their struggles, but I think that injury was pretty devastating. I think somehow they need to find somebody to replace him in that leadoff hole. I think that's what they were trying to do with Harper.
Go back to Hernandez.
He's a proven
leadoff hitter.
They tried that for a while, and they were still. I mean, he was leading right after McCutchen got hurt. They had him in the leadoff hole, but they were still struggling to score runs. And the thing is, you keep hoping that Roman Quinn's going to come up and be that guy, but the guy's always hurt. Like he can't stay healthy. So. They might have to go out and trade for somebody. Either put Hernandez back there and leave him there and hope he reverts back to the form that he had last
year.
That's
what I would do.
I'm fine with that. Either that or I was going to say make a deal for another leadoff hitter, but I think they need pitching so bad. I would rather put Hernandez back in the leadoff spot and make a deal and strengthen some other area of the team.
Hernandez led the team off for the past 2 seasons.
Yeah, I agree.
Last season and the year before. He's a proven commodity. You want to put him in for 2 to 3 weeks at a time. Well, okay, maybe you're not going to see the results that you need.
Yeah.
But if you keep him in there consistently, he's going – look, the guy's not a home run hitter. We already know that. Listen, leadoff guys shouldn't be. We don't want your leadoff guy to be a home run hitter. So there it is. Let him get on base. Let him do his thing. He can steal a base when he needs to. So let him get on base. Put Harper back where he belongs at three or four, okay? Look, I understand if he's not in the cleanup spot, that's all right. We got Real Muto there tonight, which, okay, I'll take that for the minute. But Real Muto really shouldn't be in the cleanup spot. Put Bruce there, for God's sake. Jay Bruce at least has been hitting the home runs. Let's get him more than a solo, because it seems like every time Jay Bruce hits a home run, it's a solo.
Yeah.
For God's sake. I don't know. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I was very patient with this guy. And when everybody was down on him almost from get-go, even last season, I was like, you know what? The manager is a manager is a manager. Let's stop making more out of it than what it really is. But at this point right now, I think this guy is overthinking almost everything.
Yeah.
I think he's like so damn nervous that he's going to get fired tomorrow that he is knee-jerking at the least little thing. And what's happening is we're not getting any kind of flow. There's no consistency. There's no, I don't get even a sense of camaraderie. I mean, they're giving the impression of a team that's having fun, but then you get a guy up there like Segura who looks like he doesn't give a damn whether he's out there playing or not. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, you got all these guys getting on base over at second base, and they're waving to the dugout. Everything was fun back in April and May. Nothing is fun right now. I mean, seriously.
So you guys get upset about baseball teams?
I do.
Mike and I do, yeah.
Why? Why? Why are you upset? Why are you so mad? You got 100-plus games to get it right, Mike. Relax. You still got 86 more games to go.
I mean, I actually was just going to say, I mean, with it being 162 games, I'm not going to – I mean, even the best teams are going to have stretches where they struggle. But, you know, I mean, there is reason for concern, though. I mean, I hear what you're saying, Mike.
Okay. Listen, I'll accept that. There's 162 games in the season. You're absolutely right. You know, folks, we're at, like, almost game 80. We're almost at the midpoint of the season. That's number one. Number two, right now, we are only five games over 500. And we're in second place in the division.
So what you complaining for?
Because Atlanta shouldn't be there.
You know what, Atlanta, they're a lot better than you think. Like, they're one of those teams that built up their farm system, and now all those young guys are
with the lead that we had back in April and May. Atlanta should be in the rearview mirror eating dust.
Hold up, real fast. How many games are left in the season?
About 80.
Oh, it's 80 games left. And how many games are you behind again?
No, we're ahead. We're five games over 500. We're five games over 500, but we're out of first place.
Are you serious right now?
Yes, I am. Dead serious.
Let's go ahead and let's just wrap this show up real fast because Mike has found a way to rant about something that's pointless.
I want to thank Chris. Chris, thank you very much for listening into the show good night. You know, I got his attention, didn't I? I got attention.
I've been sitting here listening the whole time.
I know you have. I can tell.
80 games, and yet you're complaining.
I can tell.
How many games out of first are you?
I want to thank every single person that's listening.
How many games out of first are you right now?
Oh, God, for real? Hey, man, you enjoy your entertainment, man. Your race car entertainment, you know?
Listening in to all 400. hundred of our shows. I want to thank everybody that's been out there.
I heard paper planes is a new sport.
And I want to thank don't be saying that too loud. And I want to thank everybody that's been on this panel here for all these many months, years, et cetera, whatever it's been. Thank everybody here. One more thing you got to do for us all. You know what it is. You got to keep us real. You got to keep us live. And you got to keep us going.
Eight damn games.
Catch you next week with 401. 401 next week.